Thank you, and good afternoon, everybody. The Labour government are in a state of absolute blind panic. They're not quite sure what to do. I think it's pretty fair to say that Reform are leading now much of their agenda, certainly a lot of their narrative. There was no doubt that in the Runcorn by-election and in many of the English counties, one of the reasons that Labour did so badly was people felt aggrieved, especially those who'd worked through their lives and saved and had a small occupational pension. They were the people aggrieved that they were losing their winter fuel allowance. Many of them voted for us, quite a few of them too, stayed at home. And it's an issue that I kept on pushing. I kept on saying, you know, all but the very wealthiest pensioners should get the winter fuel allowance, particularly as we have the most expensive energy costs in the world, directly as a result, of course, of the fanatical embrace by both Conservative and Labour governments of net zero. Now, knowing that this press conference was due to take place at midday, at 10 o'clock this morning, the government said there'd be a statement from them at, well, you've guessed it, midday. Well done. You're keeping up in the front. And they have reversed their policy, and all but those that earn £35,000 a year or more will now get their winter fuel allowance. It means that 1.8 million won't. Quite how they administer that £35,000 figure, I'm not sure. I always thought it would be easier to say no winter fuel allowance if, say, you earn, if you pay, say, 40p tax or more. But it is a considerable step in the right direction. There'll be a lot of pensioners out there very, very pleased, including constituents of mine in Clacton who served this country in World War II and felt they were being very badly treated. So look, I think we can claim some credit for this Express headline from last week. And well done, the Express, for splashing it. And I think we have made the political weather on this one. There is no doubt in my mind that the government would not have U-turned on this had it not been for the pressure that Reform UK is putting on them. Now, Reform as a party is very much on track. Yes, we did hit a speed bump last week. It could be we were driving more than the recommended 20 miles an hour, which is what we're supposed to do here in Wales. But you know, Zia Yusuf and I have worked together almost inseparably over the course of the last 11 months, and we have both taken on our shoulders the most enormous burden. Zia, administratively, far more than me. And I was already beginning the process of trying to broaden the management team. Zia lost his rag. He put out an intemperate comment or two. I wonder who in this room hasn't at some point done that, whether it's on social media or with family or friends. But it was pretty clear by the next morning that he bitterly regretted what he'd done. And as part of broadening that management team, he is very much back and enthused, and he will take on the Doge job. And I can't even begin to tell you some of the things we found in Kent County Council already in terms of the complacency of those that have been running these counties under the same political party and in terms of where money is spent. What I've seen already is astonishing. It'll be a massive job for Zia going forwards. He will also continue to help work on policy. I was in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago launching our crypto and digital assets bill, and in areas like this he has very, very unique experience. I will be announcing a new chairman of the party tomorrow. That'll happen at 11 o'clock in central London, and the new chairman will not be as bogged down with all the administration, with booking event halls and all the rest of it, as we broaden our team, and will be very much more of a very front-facing person. We just had the English county elections. I don't think anybody would deny us the fact that it was an absolutely astounding success. Indeed, it went much further than I ever could have dreamt of. And I think what happened in Hamilton, Lark Hall and Stonehouse last week was remarkable. Reform came third. Well, yeah, we did come third, but we've gone from almost nothing to 26.6% and within touching distance of the other two parties. I think it's pretty fair to say that Reform blew up Scottish politics last week in a pretty dramatic way. And there are one or two early markers here in Wales that are very, very positive. I point to the by-election held a couple of months back in Torfaen, where Reform won that council by-election with an increase of 47% of the vote, with Labour falling, their share of the vote falling by 49% of the vote. Similarly, more recently in Carmarthenshire, Reform won that seat, going from nothing to 43%, with Labour down by 34%. Is it any wonder that Labour are in a state of blind panic? They are disconnected from ordinary, decent, working folk at a national level, but I believe here too, in Wales, the way the Cardiff political class think and act is disconnected to the vast majority of Welsh people. And our team is growing. We've had defections. We've won some by-elections. We've had defections from councillors, and I've got two new councillors that are joining us here today. The first is an independent councillor from Merthyr Tydfil, Councillor Andrew Barry. He's been 8 years on the Cabinet taking up the finance role, and I'd like to introduce Andrew to Reform Wales this morning. Andrew, do come forwards.
Welcome. Good afternoon. 8 years Cabinet Member for Finance, Nigel talks of waste, unbelievable amounts of waste. Frustration from me being an independent councillor. Last 3 years, Merthyr has spent £31 million of the Shared Prosperity Fund, the latest iteration of European funding. Where's the difference in Merthyr? It's not there, it's not visible. And when you take, when we first had Objective One back in those days in 1993, 32 years later, the Northern Valleys, hundreds of millions of pounds being spent. Where's that money? Why have we still got some of the most deprived wards in Europe? And in addition to that, we're now talking about food banks on a daily basis in everyday conversation. It's not right, because the people making the decisions on those hundreds of millions of pounds aren't the councillors, aren't the politicians. They're unelected, unaccountable officers of the council. That's got to stop. We talk about where's the money. The money is there. We just have to use it more appropriately. And I see Reform as absolutely the only opposition in Wales, the only way forward. We cannot carry on this socialist madness any longer. The time has come to stop. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Welcome on board. Andrew, thank you and welcome on board. And also joining us today, another independent councillor from Merthyr Tydfil. I'm going to ask David Hughes to come and join us, somebody who served 7 years in the Cabinet dealing with social services and housing. Welcome.
Well, thank you for asking me to come and speak. I was never a political person until I had a job in social services as a manager in the children's services. And I've seen the waste where anybody could ask any amount of money to have our children over the weekend or into a residential home. They could have up to £13,000 a week just to look after one child. I then thought, I've got to do something about this. So I put my name down to stand as independent councillor. I have never been a political person, but then I could see the waste in my town and I want to do something about it. I tell you one thing, when I become the social services cabinet member, the head of service came to me and I said to her, are we going to save the £3 million overspend? She said to me, oh, you can't put the price on a child's head. I said, let me tell you now, you can't safeguard a child if you're bankrupt. And that's the way we were going. We were going to become bankrupt if we kept on going that way. So that lady, dare to say, wasn't there much longer. She had to move on. So as I look around the council, I see waste in everything. And the procurement in the councils, they spend money without any thought of anything. They just throw the money out. They give money out to the same companies all the time. I tell you one story. I had a building firm. I was asked to tender for a job in the Neighbourhood Service Centre in the Guernsey Estate. I put a price in of £50,000 thinking I'd make a good bit of money on that. However, I never heard anything. So once I became a cabinet member, I asked a person who was in charge of that department. I said, why didn't I ever hear about it? And I was astounded by what he said. You were four times lower than the next person, so we thought you couldn't do the job. Four times. So you can imagine how much money that them companies are making on our resources. So I come over to reform because, as Nigel said, there's so much waste where the money's being spent. We need to get into the procurement and make sure the money's spent correctly. Thank you.
Wow. It sounds like every Welsh council needs a doge too, doesn't it, from what we've just heard? And well done for not naming the company that got the building contract. Otherwise, we'd be off to a very rough start. But thank you very much indeed. So I'm here today to say that our campaign for Senate next May starts in earnest today. We've got a lot to do. We've got to raise money. We've got to find 96 calibre candidates to stand on those lists. And we've got to have a proper campaign plan. And of course, the elections will be fought using the de Hondt system, something that's been very kind to me ever since 1999. And I want to make it absolutely clear. Our aim is very simple. Our aim is to win. Our aim is to win a majority. And our aim as a party is to govern in Wales. And I believe that it is achievable. Of course, we'll be taking on Labour, who've been in power here continuously for 26 years. And sure, Plaid will do well in some of their heartlands, but far less well in the others. As for the Conservatives, they are dying. I think what the results showed you in Scotland last week is that in many parts of the United Kingdom, they are pretty close to an extinction event. And we will certainly be saying to those Conservative voters that are left, you know, if you go and vote Conservative, you might finish up with Labour back in control. It's a risk that you are taking. But I believe we can win. And I believe, actually, if we get this right, we will win next May. And in some ways, we're lucky with our enemies, because Labour really are failing in Wales. 26 years of failure, and frankly, they've got nowhere to hide. Wales lags in everything. Jobs, investment, growth, unemployment, the highest of any region of the United Kingdom. GDP per capita, £10,000 per head less than the rest of the country. It's a truly astonishing figure when you think about it. Wages, of course, correspondingly lower. And productivity, up to 17% lower than the rest of the country, which says to you that people don't have belief. People haven't got ambition. They're kind of, even those who are in work, many of them are going through the mill. On the National Health Service, there's really nothing Wales can say. A waiting list of over 800,000. Huge closures of GP surgeries that have occurred over the last decade and a half, leaving GPs with more patients, again, than any other part of the United Kingdom. And perhaps the most damning indictment of Labour's control of health is the worst cancer care in the whole of the European time zone. which is a pretty sobering thought. On immigration, of course, they don't recognise the issue at all. Indeed, it's policy that Wales should be a nation of sanctuary. Yes, if you come in by small boat illegally, you are to be welcomed into Wales. Once again, one of those areas in which Cardiff speak and thinking, within the bay, within the institutions, is out of touch where the rest of Wales is. And I think the Stradley Park protests that we saw in Llanelli are perhaps a more accurate reflection of how most people feel about this unfairness. I also find it, you know, hard to understand how, when it comes to social housing, and Wales does have a housing problem, as many other parts of the country does, that there is no prioritisation of Welsh people for social housing. Well, let me tell you, when we win next year, that will all change. The assault on farming in a predominantly rural place has been pretty astonishing from at government level. Most of the farms in Wales are family farms. Most of them are handed down generation after generation. So what Labour have done, centrally, potentially very, very damaging indeed to farming. And indeed, for many, many farmers, particularly in livestock, their incomes are extremely modest anyway. But Cardiff, of course, has done its best to make it even worse with their sustainable farming scheme, saying that we must cut livestock by 20%, that somehow cutting livestock by 20%, all the while China are building 80 new coal-fired power stations every year, is somehow going to save the planet. It's complete and utter madness. And whilst we might welcome a few more trees being planted to replace one with the other and to give farmers almost no chance of yield, certainly not in the short term, from forestry, I think is a pretty cruel thing to do. I believe that many, many people working in Welsh agriculture will see us as being the best people to fight their corner against this government, just as pensioners saw us as being the best people to fight their cause on winter fuel payments. And look, we've won a victory on their behalf by getting government to back down. We will try to do the same on other issues like this. Education, the lowest GCSEs in the UK. Lots of kids leaving school at 18 with very weak qualifications and with no thought or guidance into the fact that many could have gone into trades and skills, could have found something that they were really good at and could have given them some ambition for their working lives. And, of course, the insanity of 20-mile-an-hour speed limits, which saw some of the most remarkable petitions in size I've ever seen anywhere in the world. I mean, it's perfectly clear that about three-quarters of the Welsh population are against mandatory 24/7 20-mile-an-hour speed limits that have no flexibility at all. No, Welsh politics has been overtaken by the woke left, by those whose ideology is way to the left of centre and disconnected from real life, as they obsess about DEI and spend plenty of public money on it, as they obsess about climate change, trans issues and many other things. So let's make it clear, from today going onwards, a reform government based in Cardiff is going to be different. It's going to be very, very different indeed. What we are looking to bring about is a huge cultural change, not just in Welsh politics, but in Welsh life. And we'll certainly aim much of that at the younger population. Industry in Wales is being destroyed. My last visit to Port Talbot was, I did a live TV show here 3 years ago, when I predicted, sadly but accurately, that the blast furnaces would go, and they've gone. But it's okay, you'll be told. It's not a problem, because the electric arc will be up and running sometime in 2028. Well, the electric arc is fine for recycling steel. It doesn't produce the kind of virgin steel needed, certainly for military hardware. But the problem with the electric arc is that it is, by its name, using vast amounts of electricity in what is the most expensive industrial electricity energy prices in the world. Tata can say what they like. Frankly, I very much doubt, given the status quo, that furnace will ever, ever be switched on. Our ambition is to reindustrialise Wales. We are going to be using more steel over the next few years than we've probably ever used as we increase military spending and as we attempt a house building programme in Wales and even more so in England of massive proportions just to catch up with the population explosion over the last 20 years. We are going to need a lot of steel. Our belief is we should be producing our own steel. Our belief is for what uses coal still has, we should produce our own coal. Boris Johnson pronounced boldly, it's the end of coal. Well done, Boris. This year, on Earth, mankind is going to burn 8 billion tonnes of coal. It's almost hard to get yourself around that figure, isn't it? 8 billion tonnes of coal. As Indonesia, with its 250 coal stations, China, India, etc. So I'm not standing here, and no doubt some will lampoon this, I'm not saying let's open up all the pits. What I am saying is there's coal, specific types of coal for certain uses that we still need in this country, and we certainly will need for the blast furnaces here, that we should produce ourselves rather than importing. And just before Port Talbot closed, they were importing the coal there from Australia. You tell me, in terms of carbon dioxide emissions, how that makes any sense at all. But of course we have to go much, much further than this. Now, I talked earlier about education. Yes, the results are terrible, but there's an awful lot of young people in Wales leaving school with no real qualifications, no real thought for where they're going to go. And what we would want to do is to launch as many trades and skills colleges as we could. What we would seek to do is to make sure that these opportunities for learning engineering, and frankly I'm talking about old and new industries, everything from engineering to AI, people should be able to begin studying and learning from the age of 15 or 16 years old. To give those teenagers at school who have little or no interest in academic education, and there are many like that, they're just not interested, and they're bombing out of school with nothing, we want to try and bring some of that vocational training in via colleges from the age of 15 or 16. We want, of course, if we can train a lot of people in skills, that then actually prompts more investment to come into an area. You know, one of the reasons that Ireland did so well in the 90s wasn't just that their tax rate was more competitive for companies, it's that they had a lot of people with the right skill sets in technology, good use of maths, English. That was more academic, but the fact that potential workforce was there led many to go to Ireland, and we need to do the same in Wales with skills. And we want to push an idea of buy Welsh, build Welsh. Let's make sure that procurement contracts go as much as is reasonably possible to good value Welsh providers. You see, you might get some building business, you never know in the end of all this. And to try and stop the globalist thinking in terms of where contracts are sent. We will absolutely put Welsh people to the top of the social housing list, and not those that have come into this country, in many cases, illegally to begin with. We have to think about planning rules, particularly on brownfield sites for new investors, so things can move quickly in terms of new factories being built, new business opportunities. We, of course, have to scrap the ridiculous 20-mile-an-hour speed limit. That has to go. Whilst we understand, of course, that outside schools between 8 and 10 in the morning, etc., there are grounds for being grown up and being sensible. And I would say this to you, that I'm standing in front of you today with a very ambitious plan for what we can do, a bullish prognosis for what we can do in these elections, but I believe that we can make Wales better. I believe we can make Wales much, much better than it's been after 26 years of continuous and failing Labour rule. Thank you very much. Okay, I have a series of media questions. The list starts with Patrick McGuire of The Times, and a microphone will come round to you. Patrick, hand up, please.
Hello, Nigel. You've talked about, you just spoke about tax rates. I wondered if any of these plans, costly as some of them may be, you plan to use the Welsh Parliament's tax-raising powers at all. And you've spoken a lot about Welsh history today. Who is your most inspirational figure from Welsh history, living or dead?
Probably a family member, actually, a great uncle. Well, that's another story. Look, you know, as you say, the Senedd does have the ability to raise taxes, but I think we want to look at it the other way around. As our two councillors, you know, who've come to us today from Merthyr, they've talked about huge amounts of public money being spent, very little delivery, big questions on where contracts have been awarded. So I think, in terms of running Cardiff, we'll be looking actually to reduce excessive expenditure would be our first priority, more than putting up taxes. And yes, you're right. I mean, for example, to get training colleges up, from everything from engineering to AI, comes at a cost, right? But it doesn't come at a cost if you're imaginative enough to work with private business to get co-sponsors, because they themselves might get some very good staff out of it at the end. And I think, you know, as the next year goes by, of course there'll be a bigger attention to detail, and of course there'll be people standing up here speaking to you who will be our candidates running, you know, among the 96 running next year. I'm just here to kick the whole thing off. That doesn't mean I won't be in Wales regularly, here to support, but we very much want to look at Reform Wales. I want to be in a place very shortly where it is an autonomous group of people that are running this, raising the money and getting on with the job. Rob Osborne from ICV Wales.
Hello, down here. Can we talk about defections for a moment? Down here, can you see me?
Yes.
There's been a steady stream of defections to Reform in Wales now, but they're all councillors. Why can't you get a big household name, a sitting Senedd member, a former MP, someone people have actually heard of?
Well, I wouldn't insult our hard-working councillors too much if I were you, because they're sitting very close to you. No, don't see him afterwards, please. you know, this takes time. And we haven't built Reform on defections. We've had defections, and that builds our strength. My priority, you know, my own priority, is not at the minute to go around lobbying for people to defect to us from the House of Commons, from a senator or anywhere else. But you know what? There are one or two people I'm talking to, so you might be in for a surprise before too long. And I think those names will come. And I think there is an understanding and a realisation that we are the only party with a realistic chance of beating Labour here next May. And the deeper that sinks in, the more likely we are to get some figures who people, to quote you, have heard of than not. But you know what? Nobody had ever heard of Sarah Poaching a couple of months ago, but they certainly have now. So we can build our own well-known people, we can build our own stars. But there are some names in Welsh politics that I have been talking to, I can assure you. Harry Hawson from ICV.
Thank you very much, Nigel. We've seen the chaos of the Conservative government in recent years, all the infighting that's gone on there, and we saw the way that voters reacted. Aren't you worried that voters will look at the events of the last week and make the same conclusion about your party, should it get into power? And secondly, just on winter fuel, if I may, You've talked about trying to pressure the government on U-turning on that. Do you think the government should U-turn completely, even though that would cost an extra £450 million and it would benefit only the very wealthiest pensioners in society?
Well, when it comes to chaos and losing chairmen, I'd like to remind you, Harry, that the Conservative Party have had seven chairmen since 2022 and four leaders. I mean, tough to keep up. Look, you know, let's be clear. I think the ZEA has done a great job. Under enormous pressure. Oh, and by the way, a level of abuse, racist abuse online, unlike, I think, anybody in modern politics has ever had to put up with. He made a mistake. He got it wrong. It plunged us for a few hours into a difficult place. He expressed his regret to me. I forgave him. I did say don't do it again, but I forgave him. All right? And actually, you know, he comes back after a 48-hour exeat. He comes back into a very, very big job. It's a very important brief. It links directly into what we have to do here and the first question that was asked by Patrick McGuire today and the testimony given to us by our two defecting councillors this morning. And we're broadening the management team. And no, we look better and stronger because of it. Would I rather those couple of days hadn't happened? Yes, but look how quickly and effectively we have dealt with it. Thank you. Next on my list is Adam Cherry from GB News.
Thank you. Do you have a rough timeline for how long it will take to get the blast furnaces operational again and how much it will cost to reopen the coal mines?
Look, I've made it very, very clear. Reopening a blast furnace is no easy thing. This one has closed. That was the tragedy. That was why Richard Tyson and I went up to Scunthorpe when there were literally 3 days of supplies left, and or 3 days for an order to get made so they wouldn't close down. And hey, the government responded to that as well, didn't it? You know, Scunthorpe would have gone if Richard Tyson and I had not gone there on that day. So yes, it is a massive, expensive job to reopen blast furnaces. We're going to need cheaper energy. We're going to need much cheaper local coal. And we're going to need private business partners prepared to come into a joint venture with government to make it work. Yes, it is going to cost in the low billions to do it. And I'm not even pretending it'll be easy. But what I am saying is we are going to be using huge amounts of steel over the decades to come. We have to do everything we can to try to start thinking about being more self-sufficient. And I think that applies also to food production, to energy production, to so many other things. This is a change of mindset. This is saying there is such a thing as the national interest. We can't rely on our neighbours to sell us things and give us underwater electricity. We have to start thinking about self-sufficiency much, much, much more. Thank you. David Deans is here from the BBC.
Hi. You just said this is going to cost in the low billions to do it. A steel industry source spoken to us has said that it would actually be impossible to reopen those furnaces because of all the raw material that is still within them. So in reality, wouldn't you need to actually rebuild traditional steelmaking at Port Talbot? Wouldn't it be unfeasible for a reform-led Welsh government to do that? This is money that the Welsh government simply doesn't have in its budget. And one final thing, sorry. If you are going to govern in Wales, you're going to need a candidate to be First Minister. Why don't we know who that person is yet? And can you commit to a timetable as to when you will announce that person? Will we know them by the end of the summer?
All right, 2 points there. Once a blast furnace has been closed down, to actually reopen that particular blast furnace is very, very difficult. Nothing's impossible, but it might be difficult. It might be easier to build a new one. Could a Welsh government, Welsh devolved government, do it on its own? It would need some help from national government too, which is why I phrased all of this morning very, very carefully into saying, not we will do this once we're in control in Cardiff. This will be our ambition. We'd need a Westminster government to approve that as well. Who knows, that might be us in time. And we need to work with companies as well. But as an ambition, It is the right one. People talk about the cost of these things. What's the cost of all these people out of work? What's the economic cost of people out of work? What's the social cost of communities being destroyed? There are lots of different ways to look at that four-letter word, cost. Now, in terms of, you know, who is our prospective candidate to be First Minister, this party is evolving. It is a work in progress. We are building steadily, well, actually some might say rapidly, as we go. Figures will emerge over the course of the next few months, who through merit will no doubt be in a position where they can qualify to be our lead member. We are not at that point of evolution just yet. Tamara Cohen from Sky News.
Thank you, Mr. Farage. Just over here. It's not just this weekend. In the parties that you have run, people seem to relatively often clash, resign, unresign, go off message. Do you see that as your fault? Is it you? And if so, do you see that as something that you need to work on if Reform are to be a serious party of government?
Well, that's your narrative and you're going to stick with it. I think the evidence actually is very different. You'll find around me the teams that work with me, many of them have been with me for over a decade. One or two that I work with, I've worked with for 25 years. People I employed in the city back in the 90s are still personal friends. I am someone that maintains long-term friendships, and I'll do that. But if ever anybody talks behind my back, or if anybody betrays that trust, then, yeah, I'll never speak to them again. It's quite simple, and they should expect the same level of trust back from me. And, you know, when it comes to fallouts in politics, I mean, well, just have a look at the chaos of the Conservatives over the last few years. So, look, I am loyal to people all the while they're loyal to me. If they're not, then things change. Inevitably what you get are people who think they're bigger and better than me. The parties will be better off run by somebody else than me. And that's what leads to the public fallouts, because they don't like the result of it. But I think what I've just shown you with Zia, I mean, was I annoyed with Zia on Thursday? Well, I wasn't exactly chuffed with what he had to say, or how the papers looked the next day, or what you had to say in your reports. But you know what? People make mistakes. And he came back to me and honestly said, look, I'm really sorry. And I've forgiven him. It's done. It's behind us. And we move on. So, but I understand the basis of the question. What I have to do as we head towards the next general election is show that I'm able to put together a broad-based team and that it is about much more than me. I understand the essence of your question. I believe we're building that already, and I intend to go on doing so. Noah Hoffman from The Sun.
Thank you, Nigel. On the front page of The Sun today, we revealed that Britain's £4.7 billion annual bill to keep migrants in hotels takes every penny of tax from 582,000 workers. We spoke to one homeless man in Hull, Stuart, who was furious that while he relies on friends to provide him with a place to stay, migrants nearby are living in hotels being served three meals a day. What would you do to help people like Stuart who say they've been shoved to the back of the queue?
You may remember back in 2020, there was a person who went out and found the hotels that people across the channel were being put into. That was me. That was me. As that trickle began to accelerate in early 2020, I went out, I filmed the boats, I said to all you guys, you should be covering this. There's a big story coming. I even dared to say I feared an invasion, but I had to wash my mouth out with soap and water, of course, for predicting that. Although 150,000 later, it's tough to think I was wrong. And I even went and filmed one of the first hotels in the country. So I've been warning about this. I did, of course, see your front page. I thought, you know, the fact that it's well over 500,000 taxpayers' money that goes to fund this. What I'd say to your man from Hull, he has every right to be upset, every right to be angry. Just don't say anything on social media, or Keir Starmer might put you in prison. But look, this is, I mean, I could argue economically and socially and in terms of housing and everything else, It's the legal net migration numbers that affect people's lives more. But with this, it's the sheer unfairness of these young men. And it's perfectly clear that Starmer's Smash the Gangs does not work. And what happened last week in northern France, with a couple of traffickers being led off and sort of, you know, waving and laughing at the judge afterwards, Smash the Gangs was never, ever going to work. And even if the traffickers got 30 years in prison, it wouldn't stop the next lot from coming forward because the financial rewards are so great. So it's easy to blame the French. And by the way, we have given them £800 million to stop this. It's easy to blame the French. We should be blaming ourselves. We have a British judiciary who will lean on ECHR, who will lean on a couple of UN conventions signed 75 plus years ago, all of which are out of date. And we are the only party committed to dealing with this. And it can be dealt with, as the former Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott proved. And well done for your front page. Keep it coming. Gareth Lewis from BBC Wales.
Hi, Mr. Farage. Not for the first time today, you've said that you don't think the electric arc furnace will be switched on. I was just wondering what evidence you've got to back that up. And also, what evidence do you have that Welsh youngsters want to go down coal mines when many of their fathers and grandfathers did all they could to spare them that?
Well, look, the electric arc furnace, to turn it on with our energy prices where it is, you'd be producing very, very expensive secondary steel. Tata have taken quite a bit of money, to do this. Let's see. I hope I'm wrong. You know, an electric arc furnace is not the real deal, but it's better than nothing. All right? So I think that's... Sorry, and what evidence did you say? Sorry. Yeah, look, we're not forcing people down pits, for goodness sake. I did say I'm not standing here to be parodied. But if you offer people well-paid jobs... you'd be surprised many will take them, even though we'd all accept that mining is dangerous. But, you know, we can buy a Tesla, I suppose, and say, well, it's okay, because the 8-year-olds that mine the cobalt for this are in mines in the Congo. Or we can decide to mine stuff that we need ourselves under much safer and much better conditions. I have no evidence, but I do think that well-paid jobs... It's funny, the number of Brits that head to Australia... to get jobs in the mining industry is quite extraordinary, and they earn a lot of money, and they do very, very well. Lucy White is here from Bloomberg.
Hi, Nigel. I just wanted to ask a couple of questions around your plans for reindustrialisation. Mm-hmm. So GMB Union this morning, the regional secretary, has called this, your plans for the steelworks in Port Talbot, more lies from an opportunistic chancer. What would your reply be to them, and do you believe that you have the backing of working people in Port Talbot? And if I can ask as well on coal tips, Wales has seen some disasters resulting from coal tips. How do you plan to stop that happening again, and would you put more regulation around the coal industry were you to reopen it?
Well, on coal tips and on disasters that can occur, remember, I mean, in those days, you know, Wales was producing up to 60 million tonnes of coal every year. You know, we are talking about small-scale, specialist coal extraction for areas in which we need it. Every house in Britain is not going back to a coal fire. So in terms of spoil and waste, the problem is but a small fraction of what it was in the heyday of mass coal mining in Wales. All right. Look, the GMB have given the Labour Party between 25 and 30 million pounds in the last 5 years. They are the biggest sponsors of the Labour Party. Their leadership and the Labour government are tied together. They see us as a challenge, and therefore they'll be rude about us. What you will find is that increasingly GMB members are going to vote for us. And the more GMB members vote for us, the more upset GMB officials and leaders will become, all right? So there are some very, very big splits within the union movement. Frankly, the trade unions have done nothing to protect British workers through open borders over the last 20, 25 years. They've utterly failed to stand up for working men and women in this country, and I hold that view very, very strongly. Anna Gross, Financial Times.
Thanks, Nigel. This region of Wales has some of the highest rates of people on disability benefits of anywhere in the UK. Can you say whether a Reform government would reverse the cuts to disability benefits introduced by Labour, or would it go further to slash spending on welfare, as suggested in your manifesto?
Well, look, disability benefits are not really being slashed by Labour. It's just the expected rise in it will be slightly less than it is now. The growth of disability benefits is becoming one of the biggest millstones around the neck of government. And, of course, in a civilised society, you want to help those who are genuinely disabled. I think our feeling is the way these benefits have been handed out, the way they've been assessed, is wrong. You know, a 7-minute Zoom call with your GP is not the way you should be assessed for any of these things, but that's become common practice, certainly during the pandemic, in which the numbers grow exponentially. I don't believe your own family GP should do the assessment. I believe the assessments should be face-to-face, and I believe the massive growth in disability benefits being awarded for mental health conditions actually takes in things that are the normal ups and downs and trauma of life. And I do accept that repeated lockdown was one of the worst mistakes British governments have ever made in peacetime. I do accept that, and that it did do damage. But we seriously have to have a look at how we assess people and put them on that register. And, you know, once somebody is told that they're on disability benefits, it's not difficult to understand why a negative mindset might kick in and why they might stay there for possibly the rest of their lives. So we'll look at doing this completely differently. Ruth Mozzolacchi from Wales Online. We're getting there. Ruth?
Hi. You say you want the blast furnaces at Talbot to reopen and more mining to achieve that, but the blast furnaces didn't close because of a lack of coal.
No.
The site has been underinvested for decades. It was losing, through a private company, £1 million a day. So it would, as you've admitted today, cost billions to reopen. Why are you promising something that you, as a Welsh government, wouldn't have any capability to achieve?
Well, energy costs is deindustrialising Britain, and energy costs are deindustrialising Wales. And you're right, it's difficult to know just how much leverage a Welsh government can have over these things. It probably needs to work in conjunction with a national government. It needs a complete change of philosophy. It needs a scrapping of net zero, which of course we would do here as a Welsh government, but needs to happen nationally too. And an understanding that renewable energy, particularly wind, does not fit our grid system or work with our grid system. I mean, who knew in this room? The lights nearly went out on the 29th of May. Just a few days ago, the lights all but went out, apart from some last-minute emergency measures and imports of electricity from Norway and from Northern Europe. So, and that's why, I think, Ruth, you would agree, I was very cautious on timelines. I said it's an ambition. It is an ambition. It's not an easy one to achieve, and I accept that, and I did through my speech. Tony Diver, Daily Telegraph.
Hello, thank you. Now, I'm just going to ask you one more time about this coal policy. Could you just be specific about what exactly it is you're proposing? You're talking about small specialist mines. Where would they be? Are you talking about just mines in Wales, or would you be looking to do this in England as well, if you had the opportunity? And can we just be clear that the government in Westminster has banned licences for new coal mines, so if you were to win next year, there'd be no prospects of any new mines until at least well after the next general election?
We can always have a fight, can't we? We can always have a fight. And who knows, there may be situations where we just do things. I mean, we'll have to come to that, cross that bridge. Look, I mean, for example, the coal that would have suited beautifully for Scunthorpe could be produced in Cumbria. And yet, we were importing it from Japan, I think it was, to keep those blast furnaces open right at the last minute. There are still uses for coal. They are not the mass usages that we used to have years ago, but there are still usages, and if that's the case, we should produce our own. Where would they be sited? To be honest, it depends on geology more than anything else. I mean, that's the honest answer. It depends on that more than anything else. But that same principle goes for gas. That same principle goes for oil. If we can produce these things ourselves, we should produce these things ourselves, including meat. And not tell Welsh farmers they've got to get rid of 20% of their livestock. So I think you can see a common principle that is running through those things. Hannah Thomas, LBC.
The The IFS say your plans simply don't add up, and your commitments to it so far would cost more than you claim by tens of billions of pounds per year. You came here today with quite a populist standpoint to try and get votes, but are you really going to be able to deliver on any of your pledges? If so, how? Or are you just making false promises?
Well, ambitions are not false promises. That's quite an important distinction that we ought to draw. The IFS, the government-funded IFS, are criticising reform. Good Lord, who knew? If you want to talk about financial irresponsibility, have a look at what Richard Tice has been saying over the last couple of years. Backed up very much, I thought, by Dominic Lawson in the Sunday Times yesterday. Unfunded public sector pensions are not out by tens of billions, they're out by 2 or 3 trillion. If you want to talk about financial mismanagement or damage longer term to the UK economy, we can have a debate with you about our cost savings on net zero, our cost savings on what the Bank of England pays out for QE, and we can debate that, but bear in mind, all the while, the IFS or any other, you know, Mel Stride, no one's ever heard of him, I know, but Mel Stride criticising our figures, this country, right across this country, is out by 2 or 3 trillion, maybe more, on public sector pensions. So I think there are some big debates we need to have around that. I've got two more. Lucy Dunn, Spectator.
Hi, Nigel. On devolution, if Reform UK gets into government in Wales next year, will the party move to scrap the Senedd? And if that is not reform policy, will you block any candidates who do want to do away with the Welsh Parliament?
Well, the blockade is going to continue. As far as devolution is concerned, look, the devolution genie, there are some that think we can just get rid of the Senedd, get rid of it, start again. It isn't going to happen. You know, that is not going to happen. And in fact, the devolution principle is being rolled out through many parts of England as well. So that debate is dead. I think the argument that we're going to put is that devolution has not served Wales well, not because of the principle itself, but because of the incompetence for 26 years that have been running it, who seem to have developed within Cardiff Bay a very twisted sense of their own priorities. Right, that's how I'd answer that. And lastly, Elu from BBC Welsh Speaking Channel.
Hi. You say that you would like to give priority to people from Wales for housing. How would you define a Welsh person?
Well, it's a very fair question from your channel. We hadn't proposed the Welsh language test. No, look, it's got to be somebody who's lived and is settled in Wales, has paid taxes and obeyed the law. And if someone's done that for a 5 or 10 year period, then I think they've every right to say that they're fully part of the Welsh community. I think a common sense measure like that is probably about right. With that, I'm going to say thank you very much indeed.